Celeb Savant is a career retrospective type interview focusing on singers, actors, and industry experts. Join Barrett Edelstein now as he dives into the entertainment world.
Sybil is a soul diva from Paterson, New Jersey. She has been in the music and entertainment world for multiple decades. She's collaborated with some of the top producers and acts in the music industry, notably Stock Aitken and Waterman, and a number of others. She has released 6 full-length studio albums, namely Let Yourself Go, Sybil, Civilization, Doing It Now, Good and Ready, and Still a Thrill. She has had multiple appearances on the charts all around the world with such singles as Don't Make Me Over, Walk On By, The Love I Lost, When I'm Good and Ready, My Love is Guaranteed, and many more. Her singles and albums have impacted the charts in the USA, UK, Philippines, Japan, South Africa, New Zealand, territories in Europe, and in Asia. With a music catalog that spans a number of decades, Sybil continues to release new music and at the same time tour the world. Up next on Celebs Front, we've got singer and songwriter Sybil. How are you doing and where do we find you in the world?
I'm doing well. I'm actually in North Carolina, which is, of course, a southern state on the east coast of the United States of America. So I'm in North Carolina, yes.
Lovely.
And I'm actually on campus, on a college campus right now. That's where I am.
Okay, awesome. So we're going to dive into that a little bit later. But first of all, let's focus on your journey. So actually, what reminded me to reach out to you for the podcast, I was watching a Stock Aitken and Waterman documentary that you were on. I was like, I have to get Sybil for my podcast. So that's when I reached out to you. Yes. So let's rewind. At what age did you decide, cool, you want to be in the entertainment or music industry? I know it's multi-decades, multi-years. And how did your journey progress? So the hybrid Sybil journey story.
Wow. It's funny because I never, ever really wanted to be a professional singer.
Okay.
Never. That was not part of what I thought I wanted to do. But I was naturally gifted. I mean, it's something that my family, we're artists, we're creatives, and music was a big deal for us. And so it started at an early age, of course, singing in church. I started singing in church, and then it kind of went into musical theater. And so musical theater and then choirs along the way between church and school, and then went away to college and was in a band. And it was funny because I ended up, because my music from high school and then into college, I ended up running into who would become one of the people that said, oh, we want you to write. We want you to sing, because they knew of my story. Mm. And so the early years, I didn't want to do it professionally. Although I loved music, but it was just something that kind of, it evolved out of the fact that someone saw something in me and tapped into me. And they said, we want you to come to the studio and to do, demo a record. Okay. Well, that record ended up being my first record, which was Falling in Love, which ended up being on Next Plateau. And I think it was on Champion Records in the UK. And it changed the trajectory of my life, because back at 1987, I started traveling abroad to the UK, and it was like, wait a minute, you mean I can make money and travel? So that's really what it was all about. That's honestly what it was all about. It ended up being that for me. Yeah.
When you were thinking, cool, you don't want to be a professional singer, what were your thoughts of your journey of what you wanted to be?
Gosh, I wanted to be an attorney. I mean, literally, I graduated college, and I always wanted to be an attorney. That's what I was studying, what we call the LSAT, which is a standardized prerequisite or qualifying standard test to gain access to a potential law school. So it was I was doing multiple things. And I was an editor out of college. I worked as an editor and a proofreader for a publishing company, and was singing every weekend, literally every weekend, Okay. I was working with a band and just traveling around, you know, between the New York metropolitan area. So New Jersey, New York, Pennsylvania. And I ended up realizing that I could actually make a living. To be honest with you, that I could make a living. In 1987 is when I realized, and I think my parents, I was wanting to be that child that was kind of obedient and paid attention to the fact that my parents had invested a lot of money in education for me. Right. And I didn't want to be like that. I didn't want to be that what they say, starving artist. I didn't want to be that. Yeah. So and I was afraid of that. And so it was not until I realized that I could step away from I guess an ordinary kind of a job into the music industry. Yeah. And so it changed for me in 1987. And when I started, and it was, I had a 3-month, my records had done really well on the dance floors around the UK. And so I literally had 3 months worth of work. And so I'm like, okay, we can do this. Yeah.
So you've had multiple hits, multiple years, multiple mm-hmm. successful releases. You mentioned that you are on the college campus. So do you still perform live and do music?
Oh, I still do all of that. Okay. Let me say that the thing is that I work at a community college as I was an instructor for a long time. I taught lyric and songwriting, composition, creative writing. And I worked in an area. I worked with students who were deemed at risk and I loved it. They were, I'll say this, they were the rough and tough, but they worked well with me. And I think they knew that I was a little bit different. I was a little different. And then when they realized my backstory, one of the things was that they thought it was the coolest thing ever that their instructor, their coach was me. You know, yeah. They were like, Miss Sybil. So I was known as Miss Sybil. And so I started out, it started like that. And it just ended up being really a safe place for me outside of music. And so I stayed with it. I mean, I stepped away from it. I did start it in 2000 and did it for that year. And then for 3 years, I did other things. I was traveling, you know, doing work, music mm-hmm. primarily. And in 2003, my mentor came. She was the director of a program. And she said, I need you. And it was at that time that she took me under her wing. And she started basically working with me. I worked with a program that worked with students who the courts, okay, the legal system said you got one of two options. You either go to school or you go back to jail. Oh, and wow. I found that to be challenging. And I found, but at the same time, I found it to be invigorating that they would be placed in my hands. Do you know? Because yeah. to me, that was really important. And so, and I was really good at it. I was really good at it. They were doing well. And so, so I was an adjunct instructor. Then I became a coordinator for a program that helped to address housing insecurity, food insecurity, emergency assistance. And I have literally, when I've tried to leave, they find something else for me to do. And so it balances my life out because when I need to go away and sing, I'm out. I mean, I go and do. And so I'm still able to travel and do festivals and do shows. And I do work around here. I mean, I do festivals are here with my band. And so for me, especially you get to a certain age. I said, I'm not young. I don't want to be traveling, you know, 16 hours on a flight, you know, all the time to have to make a living. I don't want to do that. And so I pick and choose what works for me. Like I love going to South Africa. Love it. I love South Africa. It's probably, and people often ask me, they said, if you could live anywhere else in the world, where would you live? And I said, I love South Africa. I love Cape Town. I love Joburg. I've been to Bloemfontein. I've been to Port Elizabeth. I've been to Durban. I love the country. I do. And it's people. I think that it's the coolest yeah. thing that they've embraced me since 1993. And I know, you know, when even in the midst of before everything changed. Mm. And so I absolutely, and I love England. I love because they embraced me early on. And so So of two countries, everyone knows South Africa and the UK. I could live there outside the US. I could live happily because it's just I have friends there and people who love and respect what I do. So and as I've gotten older, my audiences they in these countries have grown with me, you know, and they get it, and that's everything because I'm not trying to compete with a youngster. I'm just not trying to do that. Yeah, I'm not doing that. Mm-mm. Yeah, no.
So I love that you love South Africa. I love South Africa as well. I live in Johannesburg. I love it here.
Joburg, yes.
Yeah, Joburg. So next time you come to South Africa, you must let me know, performing or whatever, definitely, because I haven't yet to see you live, and I'd love to see you perform live. Oh. And we'll go for coffee afterwards and go for drinks, whatever. But anyway, yes. So let's dive back into performing live. What do you enjoy about it?
The audience. It's always the audience. I don't care if it's 5 or 5,000. It's the people, the energy, and the love that you receive back when you're performing and doing a song that means something to them. And then they tell you, you know, I remember when, or I remember what I was doing. And so that's what I love. I love the energy that I get from the people that come to see me actually perform. And I think what it is like, I always joke and say, you'll never ever see a duplicate Sybil show. First off, let me say, because I'm a Gemini. So I'm all over, like I need to have the ability to be able to kind of mix it up. Mm. And so even if it's a track show, you will never see, the tracks may be the same, but I may add a piece of like a Nina Simone lyric or a Bob Dylan in the middle of a house track, because that's just how I think.
Yeah.
And so it really just depends. It really honestly depends. But I love performing live, and I get the high that I get, the adrenaline and the rush that I get come from the audience.
Okay, so I've got a question around this, or the point of discussion. I'm that person that's always right in front, dancing, jamming, doing my thing. I'll take my phone out for maybe one or two videos, one or two pictures, and I put my phone away. And I notice people around me have their cell phones out for a lot of the time. They're filming, posting, tweeting. So from the person on the stage receiving that, do you feel that disconnects the energy you were speaking of, or it's just where society is at the moment?
You know, we have to adjust with the times, and I get it. And that can be a blessing, and it can be a curse if you're having a really bad night, but it can be a blessing. It can be a blessing, because these people are going to share that with people who didn't have the opportunity to come see you. Mm. And you hope that what it does is it introduces you possibly to an audience that you would not have reached. And so I understand where we are, although I much rather prefer them just focus on singing along with me and being engaged that way. But I do understand with the advent of technology being what it is, that's just kind of par for the course. Do I like it? No. But do I know that it exists? Yes. And I tolerate it.
I love me a CD. I still budget for my CDs every month. I love the aesthetic of holding something. I love looking at the pictures. For me, it's an energy exchange too, guys, to say thank you for the hard work that you've done.
Yes.
I'm not sure if you're aware, CDs, cassettes, vinyls, they're all making a massive comeback. Vinyls, biggest sales last year in the UK since 1990. CDs jumped first time in 21 years. We've also got these streaming platforms that people consume music on. What are your observations and perceptions of each?
You know, the thing is that I remember when I had a cassette, and I remember when the CDs first came out, I thought, that's not going to last long. That's not going to last long. and then it morphed into more than that, you know?
Yeah.
And what I feel is that, and the thing is that what I'm thinking is ding, 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 because I got a lot of vinyl. Okay. I said, if I really wanted to sell some of my own stuff, I really would do okay. But I like to hold on to it. I love vinyl. I have a turntable. My parents still have a turntable. Mm. And because I like records, I like the staticky sound when you place the needle on the record. I love that. And I still have CDs, and I make sure it's funny because I recently, I love Emily Sade, love her. Mm. And my friends in the UK know that I love her. So when she comes out with a product, of course it doesn't come to the US as quickly. So they always make sure that they get me a signed copy. They literally. And I always get a CD. I like the CD. I like a book. I can't read them. I don't like reading on Kindles. It's just not my thing. I like
buying. I'm the same. Yes, yes, yes.
I like getting a book. I like opening up the book and turning the pages. Technology. Yeah, it's something about it. I was recently speaking with someone in regard to that, and they said, I said, I will pay more for hardbacks. And I said, unless I absolutely cannot get it in a hardcover. But then it's just like, I will search until I find the hard, if I can. Mm. So I'm that girl. And I'm the one who, I still have an appreciation. I have boxes of cassettes. I know There's nothing we can play them on really, but I have them, yeah. You know. So I don't have VHS, okay? I'm not going to say I went back there because it's my parents' name. But when I was recording and we used to go out and perform, we had 2-inch reels. They used to go on the reels.
Yes.
I still have the reels from when my early days, 1986, 1987, the late 80s, when we would go and they would put the thread and when they play our tracks on the reel to reel. I still have the reels.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so my issues are this. I like knowing that I sold, how many units I actually sold. Mm. And I don't think that we can really clear a clear picture of what that looks like. You know what I'm saying? That's of what that is for us. So the streaming, it just kind of, I think it dilutes it a little bit. And so that's a problem for me.
Yeah. Are you busy creating new music at the moment? Will there be new music? What's happening in there?
It's funny. I'm really excited. I call him like my little brother, but I'm working with some gentlemen. That one's here and the other one is based in Northern Africa, Hamadi. So it's Trav and Hamadi, and they actually have a record that's called Spaceship, which is really a cool record. But I'm working with them because I like the Afro beat and I'm a piano type of, yes. I like that type of stuff. But if anyone listens to my early stuff, they would know that would be kind of cool for me. Mm-hmm. Because when you look at my Don't Make Me Overs and the Walk On By, the vibe of the music that I was doing was very soul-y, was really soul-y. It had different kind of energy, different kind of vibe. And so, so yes, I'm still writing. I'm still creating. And, you know, the funny thing is that I'm not looking to travel and do how I used to do, but I just want to be able to have the things that mean something to me and speak to who I am right now out on the landscape of the music landscape. And I think that would be really cool. So yes, I'm still writing. I'm going to finish up a project. I worked with another gentleman on his project, and in doing so, the engineer and producer, they were like, "We would really love to work with you." And I said, "Well, let me get finished with this other project that I'm doing." So I'm a writer. I'm a creative, and so I never stop being that. And I keep my voice in check because I sing every week. I sing somewhere, you know, and primarily it's in church because I'm the praise team facilitator. So I don't just sing in my shower. And maybe once a month, I actually do a show, like a Sybil show. And so that keeps me on top of things. And generally around April is when I start traveling abroad. April through September are my busy travel months.
Yes.
Yeah.
From 0 to 3 to 4 minutes in creating a song, what motivates it? What invigorates it? Is it easy? Let's dive into your creative brain in creating music.
Ooh, you know what? It's the ideas for songs are triggered by maybe what I'm going through or what I'm seeing that speaks to my heart and comes natural. There are times when I literally will pull my phone out because I'm in the car and a word or something comes to mind and I start singing a lyric or a melody. So it can be at any time, any place. When I have downtime or if I hear a groove, if I hear a groove and I'm like, I will try, I sidebar do a lyric. I love stuff like that. And so it can happen at any time, any place. And then when I present it to my writing partner, because generally I have to have someone to program and to play, it's already on tape. It may be rough, but I have it. So it comes at any time. It happens in spurts. There's sometimes when I just have a creative freeze and it won't be a song, but it may be a written, because I'm a writer too. I love to write. It may be a written word. It may be a journaling thing. But it really depends. But in terms of from its inception, the idea of a song comes and any songs that I write, there's some direct correlation with my life, maybe, and my life being that includes other people.
Yes.
And it includes what I'm seeing that may just kind of trigger some uneasiness in me that makes me write a song about homelessness. Or, you know, I remember when I wrote a song called Open Up the Door, and it was really about homelessness. It was about traveling. I traveled and I would see levels of poverty that just did me in. And and I vowed I would never complain again because I think I was in Indonesia And I'd seen this woman with her child. I was there for 2 weeks, and there's one road we take pretty much every day into work. I was doing music, and she was always really, really smiling and clean. But then I realized one day she was coming out from a box on the side of the road. And I said, you know what? There's no need for me to complain. I have a lot more than many. And I just started appreciating life and what I had differently. You know, traveling, that helped me to really honestly focus what my priorities were and what they are. Yeah.
So the attitude of gratitude.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely. And that's another thing. I think that was the issue with my parents with saying I was going to go into music is that so many artists, they get consumed by, you know, drugs, alcohol, and just kind of behaviors that can take them under, you know. And I think my parents are really concerned about that. That was a big thing for them. The idea that I would succumb to, you know, conditions that would put me in a really kind of awkward or bad way. And I proved them wrong because those things I'm so thankful. I never, ever got consumed and caught up. And I have a good time. And
I
have a
good time. I can see you have a good time. You had such an infectious energy. So you mentioned that creative freeze. So when that happens, whenever it happens and for however long, do you get frustrated or you just surrender and let it go until it flows out?
I've learned how to surrender. It used to frustrate me, but as you get older, you become wiser and realize that there's nothing you can do, just kind of let it happen. And recently I heard someone say that it's okay to be in a let it be season. And it was, if they were talking about the Beatles, you know, Paul McCartney, when he wrote Let It Be and the words behind it, and how there was a correlation with that. It's biblical. Paul McCartney didn't even realize that it really was kind of biblical. And they were talking about that. And they said, ironically enough, his mother's name was Mary. Okay. That his mother's name was Mary.
Yeah.
And used her, but at the same time, the same token is that I'm in this season of let it be. It's just like there's some things that I cannot control. I'm not going to try to control. And when I'm supposed to get to that place of creative freedom again and be able to put pen to paper or voice to tape or record, then it'll happen. Because the thing is that you can't, there's not much that you can, when you're all pent up and there's anxiety, you don't get your best work. I don't care what you're doing. You don't, your best work and your best anything, it doesn't happen. It does not manifest into something that's what you might be really proud of. So I learned how to let it be. It's okay to let it be.
I love that. And also the fans or the people listening can differentiate or can feel the energy of when it's forced or pressured or anxious compared to when it's letting it be.
Yes, right. Exactly. And you know, it's so funny because when I hear a lot of these songs today, I was having a discussion with some of my other contemporaries. Julie McKnight is who I actually adore. And Julie said, we were just talking. It's just the process for songwriting for young people of a certain generation is very different. You know, it's very different. And so it's okay. How many books, I always joke, how many books have they read? Because the thing is, a lot of times your vocabulary increases when you've actually picked up a book and read it. Okay.
Yeah.
And so you can't sing about and have any diversity in what you're offering when your exposures have been really limited. Yeah. And so we talk about the fact that what artists of today, there are very few, there are some that are capable, but what artists of today are we going to remember like we remember, you know, the Aretha Franklins, like we remember, you know, the Dionne Warwicks, and like we remember, I mean, the Earth, Wind & Fires, you know, the groups, I mean, the Barbra Streisands. How many singers of today are going? That's why they make a big fuss over, you know, I'm not a Swiftie. I'm just go there. I'm not. I respect that she did. But what I think it is that people at least have songs they can sing. She does write. But how many do we have of them?
Yeah.
You know, how many artists today do we have of them? Because some of the country artists are great. But really, when you talk about pop and R&B and who's there, you know.
And also the thing is that it's so fleeting because people's attention spans are like 10 seconds. So then all of a sudden they're massive and then they release another song, a few songs, and then they don't even chart. I'm like,
that's right.
But you got to number one like a year ago. Why are these songs not? It's just people's fleeting and it's just, it's frustrating.
It is frustrating. And so, you know, I tell people, I said, look, you can respect that a person's earning money, not a problem, but don't try to diminish what other people have offered on, you know, on the platform. That maybe millions aren't gravitating towards, but it doesn't diminish how good it is.
Exactly.
Because there are some artists who are just really, really good, but they'll never get to the levels of visibility that some others will. We don't know what that's about, but it is what it is. And the older artists generally have a rougher way to go because, not being funny, we're not getting on these, we're not streaming, we're not doing that like that. We just do things differently. So does it diminish and dilute what they're offering? It shouldn't, but unfortunately it does. And that's what bothers me.
And it's also interesting, for example, like some of the artists that are coming out now, they're like millions and millions and millions of, and it shouldn't be about followers on social media. It should not be about that. And if, like, for example, if social media was out when you were number 3 and number 5 on the charts, you'd have like, but it's so frustrating. But what's interesting, they'll have 50 million followers, but they don't even get into the top 100 of the charts with their new songs. It's like, there's a big disconnect there.
It is a major disconnect. And you know, it's unfortunate, but that's the reality. That's the reality. Mm. So that's why, you know, people will say, does it bother you that? I said, no. I said, you know, the times that I was living in, the time that I came up in the industry, I think that, you know, I did well for that time, you know, but if I was, if I was that same person with those same, I said, man, it would be crazy, you know, because I try to figure out how they're able to make the millions and millions of dollars through streaming when there's not a whole lot, pennies, very
Absolutely.
Little.
Okay. So you're part of that, as I mentioned earlier, I watched you as part of the Stock Aitken Waterman documentary. Mm-hmm. What was it like to be part of that legacy and that amazement that came out of that little building in London?
And that it had so much energy in that building. It was, and the funny thing is, I often joke, and I've said it to Pete Waterman. I said, I always felt like I was kind of on the outside, really, because I was so different than the other artists that they had. Yes. I've been very vocal about that. However, I'm very thankful for, they believed in me, though. They believed in me in such a way that it kind of catapulted aspects of my career at a time when I needed it to be, you know, the change, because there were changes with the label in the States. And then there was a change with, it was just a change, and it was good timing. So they took my, I'll never forget the label that had Don't Make Me Over said, we can't seem to chart this. And I'll never forget, Pete Waterman said, if I chart it, can I have Sybil, you know, can I, because they had first dibs on the album from the US. Mm. And he said, if you can get it charted, she's yours. They got it charted and then followed it with a top 3 record with Walk On By.
Yes.
And so it was, not being funny, it was like, okay. So I owe a lot of gratitude. And it was funny because they took a chance on someone who, I was not Kylie Minogue. I was not Rick Astley. I was not, you know, I was more like the Donna Summer. Like, I loved Donna Summer. You just go there. And so I was really, I thought that I would be a good fit because I think in terms of vocally, she and I were very similar. Although we were Black women, our voice appeal it touched across, you know, ethnic groups and races and communities, because we just had, I think we had voices that were just kind of really pure. And they were surrounded by really good tracks and really good, you know, really good rhythms and tunes. And so I always loved and admired that about Donna. And I wanted to, so I took it as a compliment. And then, so working with Mike and Matt for a very short time, but Pete and Mike longer, because Matt had kind of stepped away from the day to day, but it was really cool because they were making things happen. A lot of people had problems with them, but at the end of the day, they were called the hit makers for a reason. They were making hits. And so ultimately then when they ended up creating some songs for me, and one of them, one of my biggest records, When I'm Good and Ready, you know, it just ended up being working. While it worked, it ended up working. And I hated when they dissolved, and they put me with a company that I don't think quite understood what to do with me.
Okay.
And I've been fortunate because I still work off of tracks that are 30 years old, 40 years old, 30 plus years old. Yeah. Okay.
So I know if I had to ask you this question in 2 minutes, 2 years, 10 years, 5 minutes, I know your answer will be different every time because there are millions of them. I recognize that and I understand that. I'm not saying favorite. I'm saying if you had to push play to 5 songs by other artists, once we finish this conversation, what would those 5 songs be and by whom?
Gosh, it would be a Marvin Gaye, What's Going On. Donny Hathaway, it would be almost anything Donny Hathaway did. And his daughter, Layla Hathaway. I love her. And in terms of new, it would be Emily Sandé, who I absolutely love. And so I'm an album girl. And then I have a Jonathan McReynolds, who's a gospel artist, who's amazing. He's an amazing artist. So that's what I would put on, because that's kind of what's sitting. I'm thinking what's sitting, you know, in my office at home. Because I love Marvin Gaye. I will say this, a reincarnation of him is an artist by the name of October London. If you get a chance, listen to him. My mother was like, oh, that's Marvin. I said, no, Mom, it's not.
I love the list, some to add to my list. So the podcast is listened to throughout the world. As a final message, what would you like to say?
I would like to say that live your life intentionally. We don't know, tomorrow's not promised, and we don't know what it will bring. And don't assume that you'll have access into tomorrow. So you live in your now, appreciating your now, regardless of what it looks like. In anticipation that you'll be given another opportunity to kind of live the life in the next day, in the next hour that you really want to live. And so just live intentionally, live boldly, but live carefully.
I love that.
Yeah. And always enjoy the music. Always enjoy the music.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Celeb Savant. Please follow Barrett on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook at Celeb Savant. That's CelebSavant.